Introducing Barker & Stonehouse Garden Furniture. Find inspiration for your outdoor space with our stylish collections of garden furniture and accessories, now with up to 25% off. Visit one of our 11 nationwide stores or find us online at barkerandstonehouse.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the RHS Gardening Podcast. Today we're visiting the spectacular 2019 RHS Chatsworth Flower Show, which runs until the 9th of June. I'm Catherine Potsides, the Head of Shows Development for the RHS, and we're here in the stunning grounds of Chatsworth House in the rolling green landscape of the Peak District in Derbyshire. I absolutely love this show, and this year visitors are in for a real treat. First and foremost, we have a fantastic feature, The Power of Trees. It's an enchanted woodland setting with a tree walk where you can go and experience various different trees, some great for all different types of gardens. We've got a woodlands talk theatre where you can listen to various experts talk about trees and how to choose a great tree for your garden. We've got craft demonstrations, people working with wood and willow, and we've got a fantastic immersive virtual reality experience where you can wander through a wild meadow. It's an amazing thing to see and quite a different experience for anyone visiting our show this year. As you're walking into the show, you might notice a great tree that's a permanent part of this beautiful landscape. And right next to that, you can take part in some amazing tree listening activities. Listen to the sounds of the tree as it grows, as it drinks water, as it unfurls its latest leaf. It's a fantastic thing to do. And tree listening and forest bathing and relaxing in amongst the landscape is something we're really hoping visitors will enjoy this year. As you enter the showground, you'll see an amazingly beautiful bright pink field of dazzling dahlias. We have thousands and thousands of these all set out in a beautiful parterre landscape. There's a few benches so you can take a seat and enjoy the sight of this beautiful plant. We've got lots of great garden inspiration for everyone to enjoy at the show this year. We've got some fantastic show gardens showing some really top quality design and inspiration for your garden. As well as this, we've got 5 mindfulness gardens. These are beautiful spaces and really demonstrate how gardening can be great for your health and well-being, and how a design space with this in mind can really help you to relax and be at one with nature in your garden. And this can bring a huge benefit to your life and well-being. So, let's hear some of what is grabbing the attention of today's visitors.
So I'm Alex Metcalf, and I'm with the Tree Listening Project. So 12 years ago, I decided that I wanted to listen to the inside of a tree. So I then designed this tree listening device, which is a very special microphone that allows us to hear what goes on behind the bark. We're standing near the river opposite Chatsworth House, and I've got 5 headphones hanging from this lime tree, and people can come along, pick up the headphones, put them on and hear what's going on inside the tree. So there's actually 2 different sounds to distinguish between. There's a loud rumble sound, which kind of sounds a little bit like a that's the movement of the tree. But in the background, there's a very quiet, crackly popping sound, a little bit like Rice Krispies going. And that's the sound of the water mixing with air as it travels up through these little tiny xylem tubes just behind the bark. There's been lots of people here, and they've been amazed.
Just magical.
Their kind of perception of trees have changed, because everyone looks at a tree and goes, wow, that's a really beautiful tree. But until you sort of think about and hear and understand about what goes on behind the bark, it's difficult to really imagine how alive they are.
Just amazing what's going on inside a tree that you don't know about.
So this kind of project allows you to appreciate trees and how active they are and how much is going on that we can't really see on a day-to-day basis. This is your only opportunity to come and listen to this lime tree here. I mean, I travel around the world, but I'm the only person that does this tree listening, and so it's a good opportunity for you to, if you live locally, to come and have a listen.
I'm Angela, and I'm from Aberdeenshire. Hi, I'm Joan from Aberdeenshire as well.
I'm just sitting on this beautiful bench overlooking a whole mass of dahlias, which are, you know, varied colours from very pale pinks to deeper pinks. And it's really spectacular. Looking straight down there and onto the water in front of us as well. It's a magnificent sight. Absolutely magnificent.
I love dahlias. Can't grow them, then that's why I appreciate them more too, for everybody else that can grow them. I just love them. They're just such a happy plant. The petals, it's all like a great big ball of happiness.
People should come to Chatsworth because it's a great day out. You see lots of things, learn lots of things, and it's just a beautiful place to be.
Hi, I'm Simon Mabey. I've developed the virtual reality installation at the OHS Flower Show. Virtual reality is creating 3D environments on the computer that you can then navigate around. And this year we've developed what we called a synthetic wildflower meadow. We start off on a tram, you see a butterfly floating down the train. You follow the butterfly, and then we transition you from the tram into the wildflower meadow, where you can then fly around the grasses and the flowers as if you're the size of an insect. And as you do, you'll see the butterflies fluttering around you, bees buzzing, and rabbits and foxes that will run away as you get close. You navigate through the wildflower meadow by turning your head. So if you look up, you'll go up. If you look down, you go down. And you can dip into the pond and see fish swimming, or you can hover above the pond and see dragonflies flying. And it's a unique experience that people should come and have a look at and have a go.
My name is Sharon Hockenhull and I'm a garden designer. I have designed a garden called the RHS Garden for Wildlife, and it is purely here to try and give inspiration to visitors to incorporate plants and habitats that will encourage as much wildlife as possible. It is full of flowers. Currently we have the wildflower meadow, which is full of pink ragged robin and the oxeye daisy. It's been quite popular with local bees. We've had a honey swarm come to the garden and settled in the hawthorn hedging, and they've just absolutely loved visiting the wildflower meadow. We have attracted quite a lot of wildlife, actually. The swarm of bees, I think, is the biggest one that we've had. This morning I arrived to find two ducks making themselves very happy in the pond. We have had the blue tit has been visiting all the feeders, and they like the beech hedge. We've also had damselflies in the pond. We've got pond skaters, and that's just after sort of 2 weeks of being here.
So wildlife friendly, very pretty, very natural. I just adore it. It's beautiful, and I can do it at home. I can take
that. You can have a pond in a small space. Yeah.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you. I think one of the other elements that I've tried to do as well is to bring in, I've kind of called them sort of add-ons, so really easy, simple things that can be bought or can be upcycled and made. Things like sort of bird feeders, bird tables, log piles, and just sort of, yeah, just encouraging habitats. It would be fantastic for people to pop along just to gain just a little bit of inspiration and take away some ideas of, you know, how they can sort of look at their own little spaces. You know, it doesn't have to be a big, expensive overhaul. It can be very cheap, recycled, upcycled. We are located right next to the RHS hub and the plant creche.
I'm Rachel Quinn from the Held Quinn Design Partnership, and I'm a garden designer. My show garden this year is a mindful garden for a primary school setting. It's a rural haven to be in an urban setting, and it's called the Mandala Mindfulness Garden. It's got a dramatic boundary of carbonised timber that's supposed to emanate a woodland setting, and then within it there are seating areas for mindful sessions for the children, and also permanent and temporary mandalas that the children can use to aid mindful concentration. Chatsworth itself is just in the most beautiful valley, and there's so many things to see here in the show, but also the setting is absolutely stunning. It really in itself, it's like a mindful setting because you feel so far away from the daily pressures of city life, and just come here and get away from all of that for a day and enjoy a bit of fresh air and some great show gardens and some great people.
So that's just a taste of what's on offer at the 2019 RHS Chatsworth Flower Show. There's lots more information, photos and ticket details on our website and on the RHS social media. Find us at @_RHS or search #RHSChatsworth. Another highlight is the varied programme of expert speakers in our Talks Theatre. Early visitors and podcast fans had an extra special treat as they were invited to take part in a live recording of a RHS Gardening Podcast Advice Clinic. Martin Fish introduced a panel of horticultural experts to tackle thorny questions from a garden-loving audience. So let's join them on stage now to hear some of the problems they discussed.
Hello and welcome to the RHS Flower Show. My name's Martin Fish. I'm a professional gardener, a writer, a broadcaster, and I also judge at all the RHS shows. And I'd like to welcome you to the show. We're actually in the Dig-In Live Theatre at the moment. We've got a fantastic view across the show to Chatsworth House. Absolutely amazing. And of course, it's the home of the Duke and Duchess of Devonshire. Joining me to answer all your gardening questions on the stage, we have Helen Bainbridge here. Helen is a former exhibitor. She's an RHS judge and panel member. And we've got John Wheatley, who's a very experienced horticulturist. He's also an exhibitor and RHS council member, so a very important person. So would you please welcome the panel onto the stage? So who's got the first question for us today? Lady just here. So if you could remind us of your name and where you come from.
Jan from Cardiff. Woodlice, friend or foe?
Oh, good one. Woodlice, friend or foe? Helen?
Well, they eat all the sort of decaying material, so they won't damage plants, young, you know, green, lush plants. It's mainly, you know, rotten wood that they like to start to break down, so I wouldn't worry about them too much.
You think they're a friend. John, are you agreeing
with that? I don't
ever
worry about them.
Definitely a friend. Definitely a friend. They clean up, as Helen's just said, they clean up a lot of dead and dying material. They can be a problem in a major infestation, but I find they don't like the damp. So if they get to be too much and you've got big voids in the soil, you either repot your plant, yeah, same with ants really, and you repot your plant and you keep it reasonably moist. They don't like a lot of water.
Okay, so by breaking down all that material, they're helping to recycle in the garden basically, aren't they?
We're totally committed nowadays to more organic ways of developing gardens. We've got to do something about the chemical build-up of things like DDT and things like that.
OK, there you go. So look after the woodlice. Right, we've another lady here with a question.
Hi, it's Sarah from Topcliff, North Yorkshire. Roses, terrible, terrible trouble with aphids this year. Are there any ways of treating them organically without using a chemical spray?
Okay, now Sarah's in North Yorkshire, and I don't know whether this has happened across the country this year, but certainly in North Yorkshire there has been masses and masses of aphids. I live about 2 miles from your village, and Helen lives further north in North Yorkshire, and we've almost had a plague of them. So
yeah, about what, 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was as if they'd just lifted from the hedgerows and swarmed, and people were talking about it in the streets and in the towns. It was ridiculous. You couldn't walk without getting them in your face, and oh, they're horrible. You can use organic sprays like SB Plant Invigorator is good. It's a plant feed, it boosts them, and it will get rid of pests like greenfly, especially if you don't let them get infested. And you can squash them as well if they're not too bad.
Yeah, I tend to brush mine off as well. I've got bee brush and brush them off.
Yeah, yeah.
But where would I buy SB Invigorator?
It's available in all the garden centres.
Okay.
You can get it online. But it's really good. You need to spray it quite often, though. You know, once a week, once every other week.
Would that
keep on top of it?
Treat rust as well?
I don't know. It does mildew. I'm not sure that it would do rust. It probably would tell you on it.
I think the idea is, doesn't it sort of build up the plant's resistance? That's the idea, because it's got sort of nutrients in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a well-fed plant will be more resistant to these things as well.
John, any tips on getting rid of aphids without reverting to chemical?
One of the ways we do it, quite frankly, is a very light power wash, would you believe? Yeah, stand back. If you've got a power washer, stand back and blast it with water. But obviously don't put it too close so that you won't have any leaves left. But water pressure can work. It's far easier to control, say, black fly where they all colonise as opposed to the more sort of solitary green fly which move all around the plant. But yes, I think that's what I would say. But there have been some, it's been one of the oddest of seasons. I don't know if you've found it as gardeners. It's been a real challenging season. And what we've suffered from down in the West Country are beetles coming off the oilseed rape. And it's been absolutely massive. And we use power washers from a distance, about from me to this lady down in the front, and sort of swoosh it. But not on the beautiful flowers like these fantastic lupins you're looking at.
Exactly, yes. And I suppose if you haven't got a power washer, just putting your thumb over the hose pipe would give them a bit of a blast off, wouldn't it? They wouldn't bounce back that quickly. Right, OK. Got a gentleman here with a question.
It's Graham Clark and I'm from Leeds. My question is regarding watering, and is it safe to use grey waste long-term in a garden?
Okay, that's a good question, because we're all trying to conserve water. We're getting, you know, drier summers, so we don't want to be using water from reservoirs. So grey water, can we use it long-term in the garden? John?
I would have said definitely yes. I feel the future problems in this world are going to be about water. I really do. And I think you've only got to look at Africa and some of the projects, and I do work in Mexico, and the conservation of water is quite important. This whole issue is so important to the environment. So use it, sir. If you get a problem with it, just notify it and come back. But I can't see any real problem with it at all.
Hello, I'm Jo from Darleydale, so I'm quite local. Now, I've planted a potato, just one potato, in a pot for competition purposes. What can I feed it with to give me the edge?
So is this one of these competitions where you grow a potato in a pot and then they knock them out and weigh them? And it's the heaviest weight of potatoes wins. Okay, let's hope you win that prize in Darleydale. So, tips on feeding potatoes in pots.
Well, I just use a balanced feed on mine, and I feed them probably once a week. I mean, they are quite greedy feeders. A good compost to start with as well. And for exhibition, something quite peaty and soft, nothing with grit in it, because it does mark the tubers. Lots of liquid feed once a week with a balanced feed. So the NPK number on the packet needs to be all the same.
Okay, John?
Well, I think the most important thing with the potato, and there's potatoes over there, aren't they? I think they're yours, Martin.
They are, yes.
So I always start my potatoes off, and we've got a lot we've done this year. And I start them off by chitting them, and then I build it up. And I put they go into five different pots, and you come up the stem, because they're stem tubers, and the longer you can get that stem tuber building, the better. And probably feed it with a bit of base fertiliser in the pot, but also liquid feed and liquid feed. Potatoes make the biggest tubers when they come to flower. Now, my father-in-law used to grow chip potatoes field scale, and he'd always use a cultivar that would flower reasonably early and water and feed it the whole field just as they come into flower, because they will bulk up in twice the size. This is good advice for all potato growers, to actually make sure that you always water and feed as soon as they come into flower, because they'll bulk up twice as much. And that's the best tip I can give you.
And the advantage, of course, of liquid feeding is you're watering at the same time, because it's, again, when the tubers are developing, when the flowers start, if they dry out, that really checks the growth. You need that constant supply of moisture.
Keep them moist.
We hope you're not going to pass these tips on to your fellow potato growers.
I've absolutely got to win, because I was the speaker on the day that this competition was launched, so I've got to win. Serious.
Oh, absolutely. And when is the big weigh-in?
the end of July, so I've got quite a long time.
When did you put the potato in?
March.
Oh, so and what? And do you know the variety? Is it?
No, it was. They were just given to us.
Mm. Well, that's normal for competitions. But I just remember what I said. Pot it into a bigger pot when you get it home, and don't be scared about. Don't be. Or is it in the ground?
It's got to be in the pot that was given to us with.
I see.
Oh yes.
Well, I've got a little. I could. Yeah. There is a way of dealing with that.
Is the pot full of compost right now? Have you got it?
It is.
To the top?
But I've put a newspaper collar around the top to make it deeper.
Can I go? Hang on. We
do a similar thing in our village gardening competition, which is August, and we give them a potato. This year they've been given, I think it's Marfona, and that we give them a pot, a 10-litre pot, like the size John's got there, and from that size pot, basically 2-gallon bucket size, the heaviest weight we got from one of our winners, who fortunately is away on holiday this year, so he can't take pot, was just over 9 pounds in weight. So you can get a lot with plenty of water and plenty of feed. John?
What you could do is something like this. You see this lovely bin here? Yeah, take the lettuce out, stick the potato pot in there with some soil, and really you get a bigger root run.
So you won't
and you
get
wouldn't
tubers.
Be cheating.
That's
just
not
using
cheating, and then just take it out. Okay, so what we're all doing at the end of July, are we all going to go and cheer this lady and support her? Yes, absolutely. Brilliant. Good. Good luck with that. Right, okay. I'm looking for another question. Lady just there.
Yes, I'm Deb. I live in Caldbeck in Cumbria. We have a dwarf rhododendron. It's probably about 25, 30 years old. And up until this year, it was flowering profusely. And I've just had very little flower on it. Plenty of foliage, but no flowers.
Okay, so we want to try and get this rhododendron back into flower. So is it just having a year off, or do you think there's something wrong?
Most of Cumbria, you see, you can grow rhododendrons really well. My daughter lives up there and she's got rhodos growing because it's quite acid. It was quite hot last summer, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Now, try and remember this if you're growing rhodos, camellias and azaleas. Obviously, don't water them with limey water, but the water up there is slightly acid anyway. Always irrigate, and this takes me back, I trained at Wisley in the late 60s.
The 1860s,
thank you, Martin. Wisley has still got a great school of horticulture, and part of the RHS mission is to promote careers in horticulture, and I'm a product of it. But what is really interesting is that water your rhodos and camellias after flowering. And I suspect that's what happened. There's been a lot of this year where they dried out and they didn't produce enough bud because they produce those initial buds for next year in June, July and August.
Okay, so I would imagine even though it's not flowering this year, it's going to build its strength up, and as long as it gets the moisture in late summer, next year will be absolutely fantastic. You could be entering it into next year's Chatsworth Flowers.
And by putting the mulch down, that will keep the moisture in as well. So really good drench and then put the mulch on quite deep around the root ball, around
good
the plant.
Good tips there.
Stephen Rowlidge from Newark. Sweet potatoes, are they worth growing or not? Because I've never had any success at all.
Good question, yes, because you see them offered, don't you, in the seed catalogues as the slips in the spring. Helen, have you grown any? You grow a lot of vegetables.
Yeah, I did try two new varieties, not last year, it was the year before. I was given two to trial. One was Benita. I'm just trying to think of the name of the other one, but you can't remember at the minute. But they were supposed to do well in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, and fruit, you know, produce plenty of tubers. They produce masses and masses of growth. They were in great big tubs, big, like tree containers, and they took loads and loads of water, masses of foliage. Took them out in October, which is when I was advised to take them out and have a look, see what was there. One or two were sort of decent size, peelable, but lots of them were sort of like twisted fingers, and we ended up just scrubbing them and chipping them. Lovely, but not, from my, you know, opinion, they're not worth growing. I mean, mine were outside. I've been told that they need to be grown in a polytunnel, but you need a big polytunnel with lots of room, really, to get results, because they just need that high heat and light intensity to get them to do anything, really.
I have seen some grown down near Southampton where the yields are as big as anywhere else in the world, but it needs very specialist it comes back to this whole issue about plants. You've got to choose the plant and create the conditions it gets naturally. You'll only do that in a polytunnel. But I do foresee a whole new range of crops being grown in the United Kingdom in the future, and that's going to be one of them.
I'm Heather Barlow from Devon, and I've got 3 avocado bushes growing in my greenhouse, which started off in my compost heap. Will I ever get avocados from them?
Okay, and you're down in Devon, so you're fairly mild, I suppose, anyway. So will these avocados produce fruit?
Well, the most beautiful county in the world, other than Derbyshire and Yorkshire and Somerset. You can tell by my accent that I come from the golden southwest, as this lady does. And the answer is probably not. Not within my lifetime, and you're a lot younger than me. Most avocados are grown in South Africa, and a company that I've just finished consultancy for are probably the biggest producer of avocados in the world. And they are looking at growing them, should we say, more north, in more north situations. Incredible plant. I think they will be grown under polythene here in the not too distant future.
Right, and I think we've got time for one more question. Just before we have that, if you had to pick a highlight for these people to go and have a look as your recommendation, what would it be, Helen? Where would you send the audience to look at?
I would send them to see Bluebell Arboretum. So that was our best in show when we were judging yesterday. And it is stunning. There's 2 superb cornus on there, which are just to die for. I'd love them in my garden. Go and have a look at that.
Okay, thank you. And John, other than your exhibit, of course, which got gold.
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah, I think there's such a wonderful range of exhibits here. And I'd encourage you to go and look at the plant arcade over there. The range of plants, there's some water plants and a fantastic range of herbaceous plants. It's a magnificent show, and the most important thing is to support it. Because the surroundings are fantastic. I have to pinch myself. The high spot for me is a flower show with that location and that backdrop behind it.
We're looking at that amazing view. Now the sun's come out, it's stunning.
Yes, we're looking at Chatsworth House there with the sun shining on a beautiful gold windows. And then the woodland behind is amazing. So I think mine would be to say, yes, I agree, the floor marquee, the gardens, the plants are absolutely amazing. But the great thing about a show like this is that you can get absolutely everything you want for your garden, from plant pots to greenhouses to sheds to whatever you need. It's all here. So there are some fantastic sundries as well. So it's a one-stop shopping gardening experience. Last question goes to this lady just here.
I'm Patricia from Paynton in Devon. This year I saved my seeds from my tomato, but they've got all dried up, curved up leaves that look well. Is that because I saved seed or...?
Not necessarily. What you've probably got is an F2 tomato, and that's the second generation cross. It won't be the same as what you had last year, and we just launched a new Sutton's one and a Burpees one called Honeydew, and that's actually bred in India, and that has to be F1 crossed every year. I suspect this is something to do with perhaps the compost you've put it in. You'd normally be very, very successful with any tomato seeds you save. The best tomato seeds, so I can tell you a lovely story. When I was first involved as a young technical assistant in Bath, we landscaped a railway line and we used sewerage sludge from Salford Sewerage Work. And people now, 50 years after, say, John, you created the best red river of tomatoes we've ever seen. Now, that tells you something. For effective the most effective germination of tomatoes is got to go through the gut of either a human or an animal. So that's an interesting story to finish with. It's absolutely true.
Absolutely. So, yes. So good luck with your tomatoes. Good luck with everything you've talked about. Thank you for all the questions. We've had a really good selection, range of questions there. Hope you enjoy the rest of the day at Chatsworth. Take it all in. Enjoy being in the Derbyshire Dales. On behalf of John, Helen and myself, thank you for being here. And thank you to everybody and enjoy the show.
That was Martin Fish hosting a special live recording of the RHS Gardening Podcast at the 2019 RHS Chatsworth Flower Show. As we mentioned earlier, the show runs until Sunday the 9th of June. There's so much to enjoy and to inspire. So if you haven't already, why not come and join us? You can book your tickets at rhs.org.uk/Chatsworth. Well, that's all we've got time for from Derbyshire today. We'll be back on our usual turf in a fortnight. Until then, from me, Catherine Potsides, and all of us at the show, goodbye.
Introducing Barker & Stonehouse Garden Furniture. Find inspiration for your outdoor space with our stylish collections of garden furniture and accessories, now with up to 25% off. Visit one of our 11 nationwide stores or find us online at barkerandstonehouse.co.uk.